I don't know if I want to do the show today. I'm frightened by some technical difficulties that are going on around here this morning. People scrambling everywhere. Our engineer in charge trying to fix things. We were unable to bring you certain things at the right time this morning. So I'm scared. Should I just continue here? How about our music? Can we have our music? That would make us feel better. We just play a little bit of the opening music.
Back in the old days, we just would have ripped some teletype copy and ran to another microphone with computers. We just can't do that today.
Well, let's try this, and maybe we'll feel better. One thing I like about what's happened here in the studio this morning is normally Steve Grzanich is in the newsroom and Mary Vandeveld is in her traffic center and only Dave Ennett is here with me in the studio, but everybody, for a while anyway, ran into the same room, the room I'm in. So I kind of like that. You guys can all stay in here. I feel, much more comfy and homey this way at 509. Feel free. If everything remains busted, you can stay here with me. Steve, you can do the news from here, right?
Yeah, I think so. I have a computer set up here now, so I think we can do that.
Steve is normally down the hall in the newsroom. Well, so what exactly happened? The computers just went?
Well, the computers were working fine. It's some sort of, again, I don't know the technical mumbo-jumbo of it, but it's some sort of system that runs that studio that is not operating. So that's why we can't hear any of the microphones from me or from Mary.
You mean in the newsroom and in the traffic center?
Yeah. So whatever the component is that runs those studios is not working.
But here in this room, in the Bob Surratt studio with Dave Ennett, at his sports desk, everything seems to be okay.
And I was the lucky one who was the only one standing in front of a working microphone. And I'm like, okay, where are we going?
Yeah. You notice when all this was happening, I just grabbed my coat and started heading out the door.
Yeah. I want to commend you on the way you jumped right in there.
Well, I know I can't help with these technical issues. So I just try to stay out of everybody's way when something like that happens. It's 5:11, and it is, what is this, February the 6th. Tom Brokaw's birthday today. He's 80. I was thinking, as I was flipping around watching the news last night, Lester Holt doing a great job, and of course we know and love Lester from his time here in Chicago, and I kind of know about Nora O'Donnell, who's doing the CBS Evening News now, although it's kind of strange that when they make these changes now for evening news anchors, it's not as big a deal as it used to be. It used to be big news when a new anchor would start. Now, like on ABC, the guy with the good haircut, what's his name again? David Muir. David Muir, mm-hmm. Yeah. Uh-huh.
The guy with the good haircut. That's how we judge our journalists.
So, I don't even remember who he replaced, but I'll tell you something about Nora O'Donnell. I discovered Nora O'Donnell because when we were doing Fox Thing in the Morning, I saw Nora O'Donnell on some obscure cable channel, and I don't even remember what channel it was. It was some sort of, it wasn't a popular channel. And so I made some calls, and we were looking for some contributing reporters for our morning show. So I made some calls, and I had somebody get in touch with Nora O'Donnell because I wanted to find out if she could do some work on our show. And then I was told, well, CBS just signed her to a big deal, so you're too late. But I discovered her. I'll take the credit for that.
Nice job.
It's 5:13 almost, and it's snowing. And it's going to keep snowing, and depending on where you are, it's going to snow some more, and depending on where you are, it's going to snow a lot or maybe a little. This is the most complicated weather forecast I've ever seen. Steve, can you straighten this out without your normal computer?
Yeah, I think having talked to Mike Jansen, our meteorologist, this morning, we're not going to get a lot of significant snow out of this. It's just going to be an inch here, an inch there today and tonight with that light snow continuing on and off. We may see a little bit of lake enhancement tomorrow, lake effect snow. But for today, the snow continues, a high near 31. Down to 25 tonight, 33 for a high tomorrow. Right now in Chicago at O'Hare, the reading there is 28, some light snow falling. At Midway, it's 29 with flurries, and here at the lakefront, it's 29.
Everything's fine now. We'll bring you our regular complete newscast with Steve at 5:30. See, I'm just trying to be the pilot, calming the passengers down, getting on the intercom. Sorry, ladies and gentlemen, we've had a little technical turbulence, but everything seems to be fine now. But you may want to keep your seatbelt securely fastened, that is. Sorry, we're drinking up here in the cockpit. That's why we're having technical problems.
Are you going to come through with another beverage service?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, we could use a few. It's always like they take meditation classes, the pilots, because they speak in that, you know, calming tone. They must take a class for that.
I always wonder if, you know, like when they get home, if they walk around with a little loudspeaker, a little portable, you know, bullhorn.
Yeah,
hi, honey, I'm home right now. I'm going to be really relaxing on the couch. If you want to make me some, maybe a steak, a side of French fries, and I'll just remain here in front of the television set.
It's 5:19 almost, and we'll do our first caller on the radio get surprise deal momentarily. 312-981-7200 for that. That's also the text number, 312-981-7200. You can email us bobshow@wgnradio.com. Right now, let's check in with Nancy Liu from WGN-TV. Where are you this morning, Nancy?
I'm in South Holland. I'd like to order a drink, though.
Yes, I'm sure. I'm sure you're out in the weather all night, what's happening?
The good news, everybody, is that it has stopped snowing. The snow has really tapered off, and we've been roaming around the south suburbs, and, you know, there was expected up to 5 inches of snow overnight. The good news is that we've only seen maybe 2 inches, 3 inches. We've driven through Markham and Hazelcrest, Homewood. Now we're in South Holland, and the snow has stopped. Traffic is rolling around along smoothly. However, as we're leaving the city on the Kennedy inbound, right at Division, we saw a car spin out, hit the median, and practically hit us before it came to a stop. And that accident has been cleared, but I think a couple of other cars got into an accident behind it, and we had to clear out of there only because it was such a dangerous situation for us to, you know, stay there as cars kept going around and whizzing by. But there are slick spots out there, just proof of it. There's snowpack on a lot of roads, but plows are out. Roads are getting salted, but there are those trouble spots. So, as always, when you know we have weather like this, everyone should budget extra time.
I was listening to all of this on the way in because we simulcast the WGN-TV morning news. So between 4 and 5 a.m., I'm listening to you on the radio, and I heard about that accident, and I was thinking, at this hour, at these early hours, and people are going 100 miles an hour sometimes, and they don't even slow down.
Exactly.
They don't even slow down when the weather's like this, do they?
No. And I think people get comfortable, you know, those regular early commuters, we get used to not very many cars on the road, and people go fast, and, you know, you might go the speed limit and feel like you're going slow. It's crazy how fast some people go in the middle of the night, and that's because it's so little volume. But the conditions were just ripe at that time, where snow was still falling lightly. The roads had been salted, but it was just that extra coat that made it slick. And boy, this car just spun out, and it happened so quickly.
That is scary. Well, as the TV news anchors say, stay safe, Nancy.
You as well, Bob.
Okay. It's dangerous here, even in the studio. Yeah, it's 5:22 right now. Let's say good morning to Pat from Bridgeport. You're the first person to get on the radio on the phone, so you win a prize. Hi, Pat.
Hey, man, how you doing?
Good morning. What are you doing at 5:22?
Driving into work on the Dan Ryan.
Yep. How is it there for you? Snowing? Slick? What's happening? People going 100 miles an hour?
Some people in these trucks, you know. I'm driving a truck, too, and I still just keep it, you know, keep it pretty slow. Can't be too safe.
Who do you drive for?
Oh, no, I'm in a pickup truck, four-wheel drive. People driving four-wheel drives are flying past me, but they don't understand that it still stops the same as any other car, you know?
Well, that's why sometimes we refer to it as the Damn Ryan.
Yeah, oh, yeah, every day, man.
Are you heading outbound? Where are you?
I'm heading towards the city. I'm a plumber, so.
Mm-hmm.
Got to get downtown early.
Well, let's see what we have for you for being the first caller. Well, would you like a $50 gift certificate from Builder Supply Outlet, or are you already set up with a tradesman discount from them?
I'm pretty much set up.
Okay. Oh, no, they hate it when I do this, when I change the prize, but I'll do it anyway. Here's a desktop indoor weather station brought to you by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men. Visit AmericanWeathermakers.com. We'll get that out to you. Okay, Pat?
All right, awesome. Thank you.
And hang on, and we'll get all the information we need and set you up. Appreciate you listening. Call us again sometime, Pat. All right, hold on now. It's 5:24. I was watching the Blackhawks game last night, Dave, and I fell asleep. And then this morning I heard that there was a call that may have been the wrong call that cost the Blackhawks the game. Do I have that
right?
Well,
it was a whistle that probably shouldn't have been blown, and it cost the Blackhawks, probably cost them the game. Drake Caggiula looked like he had a shorthanded goal, a minute to go. The Blackhawks appeared to be ahead 2-1, but they waved it off. And apparently, one of the officials admitted they should not have blown the whistle there. But those are the breaks. And then Boston won it in overtime. And the 2-1, the Hawks lose. It was a tough one to take for them because they didn't. Actually, they didn't play all that well. I mean, they were outshot almost 2-1 for the game. But when they had to, it looked like they had made a big play, and their penalty killing generally was pretty good last night. So just one of those things that, Jeremy Colladan said after the game, you just hope these things even out in the end.
Every time I looked up, it seemed like one of the Bruins was right in front of our goalie.
Yeah, that was happening a lot.
Yeah, and I noticed.
In fact, the Bruins, Robin Leonard kept the Blackhawks in the game. He made 38 saves, but they did score in overtime, and Boston's the hottest team in the league, or one of the hottest. They're battling for the top overall lead, and this was their fifth straight win. But it would have been a nice win for the Blackhawks had they been able to finish it off, and just didn't happen for them.
When we were out at the game a couple weeks ago, I noticed that Robin, how does he pronounce it? Leonard.
Mm-hmm.
He's a big guy, isn't he?
Yeah.
He's huge.
Well, it's been a trend to go to bigger goaltenders.
Well, I thought it was just the pads, but he's big.
Well, yeah, but the pads help.
Yeah. And, you know, it was funny because at some point last night, they were showing some old clips of Bobby Orr. Mm-hmm. And of the Boston Bruins, and you see all those guys without the helmets, and it was just amazing that they played that way.
Yeah, well, look, I mean, it wasn't all that long ago. There were still some guys who'd been grandfathered in and did not have to wear the helmets. Now, obviously, everybody's got to wear them, but you remember, I mean, it wasn't all that long ago that you saw players in the NHL, and, I mean, by today's standards, you can't even imagine doing that.
No.
I don't know why you would even want to.
Yeah, in fact, and back then, I was trying to remember, even the goalie had no headgear on, right? And last night, that one save, Lanier, Leonard. I always mispronounce that. One save, Leonard just put his head down and had the puck bounce off the top of his helmet.
Yeah. It's just, I've always maintained that goaltenders in that sport, much like closers in baseball and kickers in football, it's a different breed.
It has to be.
You have to live for those moments, man, because you talk about a pressure job. And he made some unbelievable saves last night.
He did. He had a great night.
He and Corey Crawford have both been really good.
And I don't know if any television officials, management, if anybody's with us this morning at this time, but can somebody make it easier for me to find the Blackhawks game? So I put NBC Sports Channel or two of their sports channels on my favorites on the guide, and no Blackhawks. But then they're on another channel called NBC.
They were on NBC Sports Network last night, which, by the way, with Doc Emrick doing the game.
I mean, he's great.
I love John and Troy, but Doc's absolutely the best, and it was good to hear him.
Yeah, once I found him, I enjoyed it.
Yeah, but do you have Xfinity?
Yep.
Because you can always just talk into your remote.
Well, I that's what I finally did to get it.
Yeah, but I mean, usually you're pretty safe. If it's not on NBC Sports Chicago, it's on NBC Sports Network. So just remember those two channels. For the most part, you'll be okay. Occasionally, Channel 5 late in the season.
Can I just call you and have you come over to the house?
Yeah, no problem.
This spring, Chicago's hometown baseball rivalry heads to Arizona. And one lucky fan will win a trip for two to Phoenix, including airfare, hotel, and tickets to the Wintrust Crosstown Series game on March 13th. Register at WGNRadio.com/contest. Sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank.
Orion has an agribusiness update.
Good morning. A fairly quiet day in agricultural commodity trade yesterday at the Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange. Probably the strongest performer in the grain market was wheat. March wheat ended 4 cents a bushel higher. On the other hand, March corn was down 1¾, and March soybeans up just 0.75¢. Livestock futures, Chicago Mercantile Exchange, a red screen there yesterday. The April lean hogs down 55¢ a hundredweight. April live cattle down $1.47, and the April feeder cattle contract down $1.70 a hundredweight in the trade yesterday. Looking at the calendar, the National Cattlemen's Beef Association, NCBA, continues its annual convention through Saturday. That's taking place in San Antonio. And then over this weekend, the 6th of February through the 8th, the National Outstanding Young Farmer Program will be taking place, and that's going to be in Connecticut, continuing into Sunday morning. And then we look west. One of the fascinating outdoor farm shows getting underway February 11th, and that's the World Ag Expo, expecting about 100,000 people over the 3 days. That will take place in Tulare County, California, and it's one of the largest agricultural events in the western part of the country and in the country, in addition to the big one, which is the Farm Progress Show, and that comes later this summer. That's Ag Biz. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thank you, Orion. 542. Want to lose weight? Don't look at your smartphone today. There's a new study out that links the blue light from your phone to weight gain. Yes, our phones could be having a measurable physical effect on our health. Researchers conducted a study to see if there was a link between exposure to blue light from LED screens and appetite increase. And they actually found much more than just that. Through experiments on male rats, researchers discovered that even 1 hour of nighttime blue light exposure raised blood sugar and caused the rats to eat more sugar, according to this report in Science Daily. To investigate what happens with appetite control and food choice after exposure to blue light at night, the rats were given the option to choose among a nutritionally balanced food, standard rodent food, water, lard, and sugar water. After the exposure to blue light, they observed the male animals drank more sugar that night than during the nights with no blue light exposure. One of these days, rats are going to unionize so people can stop taking advantage of them. But and who knows if this is going to be the same for us. But anyway, this study indicates that the blue light from smartphone screens may actually be a reason for weight gain because you're going to crave more sugar. Previously, some research done at Harvard showed late-night exposure to blue light linked to insomnia and various diseases. So make sure to switch to dark mode on your app at night to help mitigate blue light exposure. I don't do that. I just have the television on. Is that blue light? I don't know if that's the same thing or not. Check with the rats on that.
They always say, though, you should turn off your TV and not have exposure to it for about an hour before you go to bed.
That makes me sleepy. That's how I fall asleep.
Yeah, me too. There are a couple of shows that I always put on when I want to take a nap or I'm...
PBS.
PBS is one of them. I don't know if you ever watched that show Ancient Aliens on History Channel.
No.
But the narrator, his voice just puts me to sleep in like 2 minutes. It's great.
Okay, well, we hope... I'm not putting anybody to sleep on the road anyway. It's kind of slick out there this morning at 5:48. Steve Grzanich now with our weekly Associated Bank Thought Leader Conversation.
We're with Christy Peterson, one of the vice presidents at Whitnell. It's our Thought Leader Conversation. And good morning, Christy. Welcome back.
Good morning, Steve. It's great to be here.
I want to talk a little bit about an interesting story that you wrote about how you were going through the history of your family and recording some of the history of your family and how you've pulled out of that sort of some guides for wealth management with a family-oriented viewpoint. Talk to us a little bit about the project you were on and why it matters when we talk about wealth management.
Sure. In August, I had a lot of family come visit me from Seattle. And as I got ready for their visit, I started going through a lot of the old family letters that I had saved and collected and also a lot of family newsletters. And it just kind of reminded me and re-engaged me in a love of family history and stories that I've had really ever since I was a little girl when I would just sit at the dining room table at my grandparents' house and label the back of pictures. And then once I got my first tape recorder, I think that was a Christmas gift when I was 8, I started recording my grandparents telling me the stories of growing up in the Depression and what it was like and, you know, just the stories of their lives. And I always found that really meaningful. And so my grandparents grew up in Oak Park, Illinois. I grew up in St. Louis. And this family coming from Seattle, I really wanted to show them, here's the family history of Oak Park while they were here in Chicago. And as part of that, I wanted to include the family stories. So I had visuals and I had stories. And what that's really all about in the end is values. It's about family values and saying, this is what our family is about. You're a part of that. You're part of something bigger. Here's what we believe, and here's how we live. And it just feels very meaningful to be a part of that. So as I thought about what I was going to write about for the blog post, it just struck me that this is true for every family. Every family has stories, and every family has values that they live by and makes people feel a part of something bigger than themselves. And a lot of times, especially if there's a lot of wealth in the family, you can believe there's a big story that comes with creation of wealth. I mean, there are sacrifices made and a lot of values that led to building up that wealth. And generally, the people who have put in all that work have a vision for what they want their family to look like. Mm-hmm. They have a vision they're trying to create. And the values that we live by are what perpetuate and sustain that vision. And the family stories are how we communicate the values.
And somewhere in there, you find the story, you get the story of the motivation to create the wealth in the first place, don't you?
Yes, yes. So it could be, you know, a lot of times there's immigrant stories. So they came over here with nothing and they had this vision of a family and a good life and food on the table. You know, generally if they're immigrating, life wasn't so great in the old country, right? So they're trying to create a better life for their family. And so doing that, generally, there's sacrifices made. So again, that's where you see the values. What do we value in life? We value hard work, or we value creating a quality product, or a good work ethic, things like that.
In your work with clients, especially younger clients, maybe the younger generations of families like these, how open to stories of their family are people? And how much do you tell them that's important for shaping their future wealth and wealth management?
Generally, so one of the things I'm working on now is I'm working towards my designation, Registered Life Planner. And what life planning is it's about forming an emotionally and sensory-rich vision of one's ideal life. And so as a financial life planner, my role is to facilitate a structured process of, first of all, finding out what really matters to people. And people love to talk about what matters to them. They don't always know it off the top of their heads. And so sometimes if I can just get them telling me stories of how they came to their current job or why they chose a certain school, I can help them to tease out what are the values behind that. But that's the first thing, is find out what really matters to people. And then my process goes into helping them to create a vision and strategy of this most ideal, fulfilled life. Then together we will identify and put together a plan to overcome the obstacles to that vision. And I'll apply some financial knowledge that I've built up over a couple of decades in finance. And then we'll co-create an execution plan together. But the family stories part of this is that they are key for communicating and instilling the values that sustain and perpetuate that vision.
Mm-hmm. Risk is a common part of the story, isn't it, for not just current generations, but for past generations as well?
Yes. In my family, there was a business that got talked about all the time when I was growing up, the Oscar Daniels Company. And the Oscar Daniels Company was started by, I think, great-great-great-grandfather or something. But it was a steel frame construction company. They've done a lot of the buildings in Chicago. So I always felt at home in Chicago, even though I grew up in St. Louis, because I can look at all these buildings and bridges and say, ah, the Oscar Daniels Company, they built the steel framing on all of these. But what that translated to in my own family was this value on entrepreneurship. And so my grandfather, the company fell apart right at the end of the Depression. And my grandfather went on, he thought he'd go in and take over the business with his cousin. Instead, he went on to be an aeronautical engineer. So he was working on the Mercury and Gemini spacecraft. Oh, cool. But when he took an early retirement package from McDonnell Douglas, it was McDonnell then, he started a business because that's what he thought you did as a Peterson man in the family, is you started a business. Now, for him, it didn't go as well. I mean, the Oscar Daniels Company at one point spanned San Francisco, Seattle, New York, Chicago, Tampa, Florida. It was national. And it did ultimately fail with the Depression. My grandfather's business didn't last that long. But it was stories that said, look, there are risks worth taking, and having your own business is a worthwhile endeavor.
Christy, how can people get a hold of you and have a one-on-one and maybe talk a little bit more about a family story?
I'd love to talk to anybody about their family stories. I consider myself a collector, and I would love to hear yours. I can be reached at 630-575-2390. That's 630-575-2390. Or at cpeterson@whitnell.com. That's C-P-E-D like David, E-R-S-E-N @whitnell.com.
Thanks for coming in this morning.
Thank you, Steve.
Christy Peterson is Senior Vice President at Whitnell. You can read her blog at whitnell.com. On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Thursday, February the 6th, today we'll get the weekly jobless claims. This morning, analysts expect to see a slight decline. Initial claims for unemployment benefits are forecast at 216,000. That's 3,000 fewer than the week before. We'll also get the Challenger job cut report, also productivity and cost data, and the EIA natural gas report. Another busy day for earnings. Big companies reporting earnings today include ArcelorMittal, Duncan, Estee Lauder, Fiat, Chrysler, Kellogg, The New York Times, Philip Morris, Visa, Outdoor, Yum Brands, Activision, Blizzard, Twitter, and Tyson Foods. Just a few things that could move the markets on this Thursday, February the 6th.
It's 6:11. Good morning. Bob Surratt pretending to be awake. We're going to sort out this weather story here for you in a second with meteorologist Mike Jansen. It's kind of complicated as to where snow is falling and when snow is falling today, and then lake effect snow. So we thought we'd get Mike to kind of straighten this out. By the way, they're very excited in Austin, Texas, because apparently late last night in Texas it was snowing. So, you know, they're okay with it there, but not here. Is Mike there? Morning, Mike.
Good morning.
Listen, where will most of the snow accumulate, and how long will snow be around here today?
We are starting to see the snow picking up again. We do expect it to do so more likely as we get closer to maybe 8 or 9 o'clock, but it's not going to be widespread where everyone's going to see it. But some light snowfall is expected. It will taper more so coming up this afternoon, and then you have the potential here for tonight of lake effect snow showers that are going to set up, and for the most part during the overnight hours be in northeastern Illinois, shifting their way towards northwest Indiana as we head toward tomorrow morning. Now, during the daytime today, somebody out there may pick upwards of an inch of snow, and another inch could show up tonight as well under those bands of lake effect snow. All right. Now, trying to pinpoint those exact locations is pretty tricky, and I'm not going to say, well, Evanston will get this much, and Gary will get this much. Just know that we got some more light snow on the way.
All right. I think I understand it. Thank you. Appreciate it. We'll check in with you again a little later on.
All right.
And I think, Dave, that the Cincinnati Reds are trying to be Cubs East. I see that they signed Pedro Strop, so... And they got Nick Castellano, right? And who's next?
Well,
don't tell me Chris Bryant.
No, I can't see that. No, I don't think Reds are a team that's in the market for him.
And if the Cubs do trade him, I would hate to think he'd be in the NL Central.
You would think not.
Yeah, you would
hope that that wouldn't happen. But stranger things have happened, though, Bob. But
yes, they have.
I would think that that would not be likely.
They signed Strop to a one-year deal, about $1.8 million. So there you go.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, good morning, everyone.
Now the top six at six with Bob Surratt on WGN Radio.
6:18, here we go. Pete Buttigieg now stands virtually even with Bernie Sanders in the Iowa Democratic caucus. 97% of the precincts reporting now. Mayor Pete with 550 state delegate equivalents. Bernie Sanders, 547. That number traditionally determines the winner of the Iowa caucuses. Bernie Sanders leads in two measures of that popular vote. Elizabeth Warren remaining in third place, Joe Biden in fourth, the result of what he called a gut punch. It's unclear when all of the results from Monday's voting will be finalized. Part of the reason some votes were submitted by snail mail.
Now, page two.
The president is speaking at 11 a.m. Chicago time today about what he called our country's victory on the impeachment hoax. After a sharply divided Senate acquitted him on charges that he abused his power and obstructed Congress. His reelection campaign moved quickly, sending out a fundraising email declaring, "Sorry, haters, I'm not going anywhere." Democratic leaders promised to continue their investigations of the president.
Page three.
A Wisconsin resident who returned from a trip to China last week has been sickened with a new virus that originated there, becoming the first confirmed case in the state and the 12th in the U.S., according to health officials. The adult patient went straight from the Madison Airport to the University of Wisconsin Hospital Emergency Room to be tested for the virus, and they have remained in isolation at home ever since. The Madison mayor reporting that state and local officials are declining to release more details about the person, including age and sex. The person does live in Dane County, where the capital city of Madison and the flagship University of Wisconsin campus is located, but officials are not saying where exactly. They say this person had mild symptoms, including fever, cough, and shortness of breath, but is doing well and recovering at home, according to the chief medical officer in Wisconsin's Department of Health Services Bureau of Communicable Disease. The patient was tested for the coronavirus because they had traveled to Beijing, China within the past couple of weeks.
Page four.
You may have heard about Macy's making waves, announcing they would be closing around 125 stores over the next 3 years as they struggle to stay afloat in this age of online shopping. More information coming out about that now. Macy's will also be cutting 2,000 corporate jobs. They will shutter their offices in San Francisco and Cincinnati. There is an updated list of store closures starting in 2020 here in Illinois. They will close in Carbondale at University Mall and in West Dundee at Spring Hill Mall. But here in the city, they will be open.
Dome at my concern.
If you're looking for a job, Six Flags Great America is planning to hire 4,000 crew members for the 2020 season. The theme park and Hurricane Harbor are hosting auditions that will be going on this Saturday for their entertainment positions. Registration for singers takes place at 10 a.m., dancers at 11, and if you want to be an ambassador of fun, that will be going on at 1 p.m. this Saturday. And they aren't just looking for entertainment team members. Starting on Monday, Great America is holding daily interviews for lifeguards, ride operators, and park service team members. Those interviews take place through Sunday the 16th. Between noon and 6.
Oh, my gosh. I auditioned for that once.
You did?
I was in high school. Yes, my choir director took a couple of us out there to audition.
What job
it
were you going for?
It was a train wreck. A dancer-singer.
At Great America, huh?
Yes. It was terrible. I was so bad. That brought back a bad memory. Thanks, Bob.
Just thinking, Mary Vandeveld out there.
I could dance,
at Great America.
But singing was not one of my stronger points. And I didn't make it past the first round.
Would you toss in a traffic report now and then during the song?
I should have. Maybe that would have helped.
Once again, if you're interested in any of these jobs, Six Flags Great America. This will be going on, not this weekend, but next weekend, and you can contact them for all the hours, but mainly 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. on the weekend, and then check with Six Flags Great America for all the details. It all, let's see, starts Monday, February 10th, so and then through the next weekend. There you go.
Okay. Stand by for news.
America's most popular chains are spending millions and hiring thousands in the battle for the growing breakfast market. Americans ate 102 billion breakfasts last year, according to research. And breakfast is the only time of day that restaurant foot traffic in the country is growing. Wendy's recently announced a major push into breakfast, including a $20 million investment and 20,000 new workers. Wendy's unveils its new menu in March. They anticipate the breakfast menu will ultimately account for 10% of total daily sales. Burger King and Taco Bell have also bolstered their morning offerings in the past few years. And even the chains that already own breakfast that do well are trying new tricks. Dunkin' Donuts is teaming up with Beyond Meat and Snoop Dogg to roll out a plant-based breakfast sandwich. And IHOP is debuting a fast casual restaurant concept called Flipped that serves up pancakes to people on the go. One thing I've noticed working these hours, you're kind of ready for dinner by about 10:30 in the morning. You know, I'll have a steak for breakfast
really?
Now.
I just, if I eat a big meal during the day, I'd want to go home and go to bed, but that's kind of what you're saying, isn't it?
Yeah, kind of. Yeah. You know, yesterday I met my nephew Judd for breakfast.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. Caught up with him. We had him on the show yesterday with Troy Murray. That was fun. And, of course, he's the radio voice of the Bruins now, so he was in town. And I don't want to say where I picked him up because they probably don't like this to be public, but he was staying at a pretty fancy hotel. And I said, hey, Judd, that's pretty good. That's pretty good. And he said, hey, welcome to the National Hockey League. I guess they treat everybody pretty well.
Yeah,
when
they
you're
do.
Traveling with the Boston
Bruins.
Go
ahead and say it because, hey, they're the enemy. Right?
Yeah, really the enemy. Hawks should have won that game last night,
yeah,
right?
That's a tough one, but hey, got to move on.
Yeah, possibly a referee error, the cause of that last night. But, yeah, it was fun to see Judd, and it was funny because we were driving then up Michigan Avenue, and he pointed out a guy wearing like a black tracksuit, and he said, "Hey, that's one of our guys. That's one of our Bruins." You know, so I thought maybe I should, you know, maybe go up and kick the guy in the ankle or something, but no, I thought better of it.
Yeah, that's a good call on your part.
All right, well, let's close it up, shall we?
And that's the way it is.
This has been the Top 6 at 6 with Bob Sirois on WGN Radio.
It's a good morning to dream about warm weather and one of the great features of summer around here, Highland Park's Ravinia Festival. And Maren Alsup has just been named the first ever chief conductor and curator of the Ravinia Festival. Good morning and congratulations, Maren. How you doing?
Oh, thanks so much. I'm great. I'm thrilled.
It's good to have you on the show this morning. And explain exactly what your job entails. What does it mean to be the curator of the Ravinia Festival?
You know, that's a role that sort of organically grew out of my involvement in the Bernstein 100-year celebration. And, you know, just talking about programs and creating a thread through the programs, and just I think it's adding another dimension to conducting, which is something that I really love.
You've been conducting the Chicago Symphony Orchestra. You did that at Ravinia a few times. I know that they don't release everything on the schedule until I think it's March, but what can you tell us about what you have planned? I know there are a couple of things coming this summer that you have already scheduled and you'll be involved with. What are they?
Yeah. Well, we're very excited about drawing a connection to the 100th anniversary of the 19th Amendment. So I'm teaming up with Cynthia Erivo to do a big show called Legendary Women. That'll be a lot of fun. And then along the same lines, I'm doing a live score by a composer named Richard Einhorn to a silent film from the 1930s, quite an iconic film called The Passion of Joan of Arc.
A lot of people get excited about all the rock acts at Ravinia, and the way it's working now, they have folks like you dealing with classical music, other people dealing with the other kinds of music. So it's really become a diverse summer every year, hasn't it?
Oh yeah, while the classical offerings, you know, they're probably 60-65% of what Ravinia does. The range of offerings, you know, and I think the quality and the excitement of all the offerings, especially the popular acts, it's something for everyone, you know. So I urge everybody, if you haven't been there, it's one of the most beautiful settings on the planet, isn't it? It's so idyllic.
Yeah, it is fantastic. And I think everybody on the north side and the north suburbs is familiar with it. But a lot of folks in the area aren't. And if you haven't been to Ravinia, put it on your calendar and check it out this summer. And we'll know in a couple months the complete schedule there. Here's what I want to do. And maybe you can put in a good word for me, Maren. I want to be one of the people who walk around with the signs that say, shh, quiet. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but that's sort of Ravinia style, isn't it? It's, you know, informative but not invasive, and so it's you know, you can come and be comfortable and not feel like there are too many rules around listening to classical music. This is a place that opens the doors wide for everybody.
Yes, it does. Maren Alsup, known for her innovative programming approaches, the new chief conductor and curator. Congratulations, and we look forward to catching up with you this summer, Maren.
Thanks so much. See you there.
All right. Have a great day. All right. You want to hear what else is on this list of foods that you don't actually need to keep in the refrigerator besides apples and bananas? Avocados. They do better on the counter. We all know that, right? If you have unripe avocados that you want to ripen up, the fridge is not the place for them. The cold air causes avocados to ripen more slowly. Leave your avocados in a cool, dry place, like on your counter in the open air.
Yes.
All right. That's something that we all know. But there are a few surprises on this list. Now, Steve, you were asking about bread. Nothing dries out bread faster than leaving it in the refrigerator. At cold temperatures, bread will turn stale, dry, and tasteless. Also, bread acts as a kind of sponge, and it will soak up whatever odors are lingering around your fridge.
And see, all this time, I thought I was keeping it fresh longer.
No. Hmm. No. But there are some breads that, if you're not going to use them quickly, put them in the freezer, but you don't want to keep them in the fridge. Carrots. What's your guess on carrots? You want to keep them in the refrigerator?
I'd say the fridge, yeah. Maybe the crisper of the fridge.
Yes.
Carrots can actually rot and become waterlogged and droopy if they're left in the fridge for too long.
Well, wow. They do kind of waterlogged sometimes.
Especially the ones you buy in the bag.
Yeah, the mini carrots.
Yeah, the mini carrots.
Mm-hmm. You should store your carrots away from direct sunlight in a place with low moisture. Well, you know, who doesn't get waterlogged and droopy sometimes, though? As somebody just texted us from 815, if it isn't in the cooler at the store, it doesn't need to be refrigerated. And this person keeps their produce in a bowl on the table because they're more likely to eat the healthy stuff if it's visible. Well, that's April. Thank you, April.
What about like an orange? Isn't that like
citrus fruits?
Yeah.
Keep citrus out on the counter.
Typically, a ripe fruit is a sweet fruit, which means that fruit that's kept at room temperature will ripen faster and develop more sweetness. Citrus fruit can be rather sour if it's not given enough time or space to ripen. Keep fruits like oranges, grapefruits, lemons, and limes out of the fridge. If you absolutely love cold oranges, store them outside of the fridge, but pop them into the fridge an hour or two before you want to eat them.
Interesting. But who's going to remember to do that?
That's a pain in the neck.
What about stuff that says,
I like cold oranges.
And what about a lemon or lime if you want one in your gin and tonic? I mean, you know, you got to have it cold.
And what about stuff that you say, it says refrigerate after opening? You may not find that at the refrigerated aisle in the refrigerator at the store, but when you get home and open it,
no, right?
Then
of course.
You have to refrigerate it.
Yeah, follow the instructions. And Mary, as far as your alcohol, you just keep that in a paper bag somewhere. Okay. Now this is something I am adamant about because I have a sweet tooth. I'm addicted to sugar. Just ask my wife. Chocolate does not belong in the fridge. A lot of people, it says here in this study, absolutely love cold chocolate, but the ideal temperature for chocolate is actually between 65 and 68, which is much warmer than the average refrigerator. Only store your chocolate in the fridge if you live in a very warm part of the world. That's not us. And your chocolate is at the risk of melting completely. If you really love freezing cold chocolate, though, they said go ahead, but it also dries it out. Your chocolate will not taste as good if it's in the fridge.
Well, I learned my lesson. I just chipped my tooth on a peanut cluster that was a cold piece of chocolate.
I thought of you yesterday, Mary, because you mentioned this dental issue to me yesterday, and I was in the grocery store, and, you know, I've been known to pop a grape or two in my mouth while I'm shopping.
What?
It's expected. You know, they leave a couple of bags open so you can check the grapes. Don't they? Isn't that why they leave a couple bags open?
No.
Well, anyway, I popped in my mouth what I thought was a grape, and it turned out to be a cherry. And I bit down on it, and I thought, fortunately, my tooth survived, but I was thinking of you, Mary.
Thanks. So don't put chocolate in the refrigerator.
Don't refrigerate your leftover coffee. Do you do that? You can actually keep coffee in the fridge as long as it's in an airtight container. That goes for both coffee beans and leftover brewed coffee. Generally, coffee beans need to be in a cool, dry place, and a fridge is cool but not very dry. Brewed coffee can make everything else in your fridge smell like coffee, and if it's too hot, it can actually raise the temperature of your whole fridge, which is damaging to all of the meat and dairy you have in there. What about cucumbers? Keep cucumbers in the refrigerator, you think?
Yeah.
Yes.
Because you want to have them cool as a cucumber. Right?
No, wrong. Oh. Cucumbers do not do well when they're left in the refrigerator. They can quickly become waterlogged and lose a lot of their flavor. Instead, they say store your cucumber on your counter or in a pantry. Just remember you left it there. You don't want to find a rotten cucumber in your pantry later on. If you want your cucumbers to be cool because you want to put them on your eyes or something, you know, people do that, get rid of the bags, then you can leave them in the fridge momentarily or just store slices of cucumber in ice water. Now, here's one that's fascinating. Eggs. In some countries, eggs are not kept in the refrigerator in grocery stores or in people's homes. That's how it's done across the pond in the UK. A study recently uncovered there found that it actually makes no difference whether or not you store your eggs in the refrigerator. So they say you might as well save yourself some fridge space. Here in the U.S., though, everybody keeps their eggs in the refrigerator, right? The FDA recommends that eggs be kept there. However, it's best to read the full precautionary statement before quitting the fridge on this one. So, you know, you're on your own there with the eggs. And let's see what else we have on the list here. Honey. It may seem obvious, but you really shouldn't store honey in the refrigerator. The cold air will cause the honey to crystallize, which isn't great. If your honey does crystallize, just put the whole jar in a warm water bath to dissolve the crystals. Honey is a natural preservative, so it doesn't need to be kept in the fridge or freezer for it to last a long time.
Okay, so in similar terms, what about syrup? People put theirs in the fridge or in the pantry. It's probably along the same lines as honey, I would think.
Well, in this report, they didn't specifically mention syrup, but they did talk about sauces, and especially hot sauces. And they say that those products have a long shelf life. They're full of natural preservatives like vinegar, and they often don't contain very many actual fruits or vegetables. You should store hot sauce away from direct sunlight and keep it in a cool, dry place like a pantry or cupboard. If you're a hot sauce fanatic, you might just want to leave it on the table because you know you're going to use it again with your next meal. And I would imagine syrup. Well, it depends if you got the real stuff or you've got the fake maple syrup.
Aunt Jemima.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. That's what my mom always bought.
Yep.
How about, now this is one that, if you think about it, this makes a lot of sense because you see ketchup and mustard left out at restaurants, right? But people put those items in the refrigerator.
We do.
Well, contrary to popular belief, ketchup does not need to be stored in the fridge, even after the bottle is open. And that's why all those diners can just leave glass bottles of ketchup out on the tables for hours at a time. It's full of preservatives. As long as you don't contaminate it, ketchup can last for a really long time. See?
But not mayonnaise.
Not mayonnaise, no. Your milk product. And I guess, did I mention the mustard? It's the same deal for mustard. And, you know, mustard is always out at your finer hot dog stands, right? Well, let that be a lesson to you. Okay, anything else you need to know here? I think I've covered the list here.
Coconuts? Well, yeah.
You have coconuts at home?
Well, once in a while.
Kale, Dave. Lettuce, kale.
Kale, that goes in the in the crisper.
Yeah. Canned tuna can be in the cupboard. You don't have to store that in the fridge. Pineapple does not need to be in the fridge.
But tuna salad does need to be in the fridge.
Yes, it does. A lot of salad dressings don't need to be in the fridge. Pickles have natural preservatives, so you don't need to store them in the fridge.
Why do we even have a fridge now?
No, you don't need it. Don't put onions in there either, Mary. Or melons.
We could have half of a refrigerator. It would be okay.
But as I tell my wife...
The ice box.
I call it the ice box because I watch The Honeymooners. But as I tell my wife all the time when I turn the thermostat down and she wants to turn it up, refrigeration preserves, keeps you young. Just, that's my argument
that's
right
now. That's a good
one.
I like that.
You
can
feel free to use that.
I'll put myself in the refrigerator.
The news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Good morning. 10 after 7, driving with Bob Surratt. And the Chicago Auto Show opening up to the public on Saturday. Get a little preview from J.C. Phelan from the Automobile Trade Association Board and from Jack Phelan Chevrolet and Dodge Chrysler Jeep Ram. Hey, J.C., good morning. How you doing?
Good morning, Bob. Thanks for having me.
Well, listen, we're excited about the auto show because that means spring is not too far away. And I know one of the big deals this year is you can not only just sit in the cars, but they have some tracks and you can do some driving, can't you?
Yeah, so we're pretty excited. We have four test tracks. We have Jeep, Ram, Volkswagen, and Toyota. Jeep's been there, kind of our staple. It's been there for quite a few years, and really get a neat obstacle course and kind of experience all the technology in the nice Jeeps.
The show is going to be open from 10 a.m. till 10 p.m. every day, except for the final day, which is President's Day, when they close up at 8 p.m. And before we talk more about what's at the show this year, talk a little bit about the first look for charity, JC, which is going to be the night before the show opens. I've been to these. A lot of great people, a lot of great food, and it's a great cause, isn't it?
Absolutely. So we're raising money for 18 local charities. It's very important to them, and it's very important to us. It's a great night. It's a black tie gala. Good first look chance to get to take a peek at all the vehicles. But while raising money for 18 local charities, last year we raised almost $3 million, and we're looking for another big year.
Okay, more on how you can get tickets in just a second here. So when the auto show opens Saturday, there's going to be nearly 1,000 of the newest cars, trucks, and SUVs on display, everything that's new in the industry, and you can really get a feel for the car you're thinking about. It's a great place to do some preliminary shopping, isn't it?
You know, it's really neat. In February, we've got over 1 million square feet of exhibit space, and it's 75 degrees, and it's a nice no pressure environment where you can see some of the new product. I believe we have almost 20 launch products that'll be the first opportunity for the public to get up close and personal with. We've got product specialists all over the floor, so any questions you have, it's a nice environment just to kind of walk around and enjoy time with not only yourself, but it's a great event for families.
And JC, is the big story still all the technology and the self-driving features and all of the safety features?
Yeah, so there's going to be quite a few launch vehicles. First time, the Ford Mustang Mach-E, which is an electric vehicle, the Porsche Taycan, the Audi e-tron. So the electric is kind of the buzzword now, and those will be on the floor. We also have the all-new Chevrolet Corvette, which is really creating a lot of buzz. That's going to be here really the first time for the public to see, so it's pretty exciting for Chicago.
McCormick Place will be hopping. You know what? I thought we'd do after a break. Maybe people have some ideas for new car options they'd like to see. I'll tell you the ones I'd like to see on cars. I'd like to see a switch where you could put on a fake brake light for somebody who's tailgating you. You know, just send them a little message. And I'd also like a loudspeaker system on my car. Have a little microphone, so if I need to yell at any drivers in front of me, behind me, or to the side, I can do that. I don't know if those options will be there at the auto show, but JC, you may want to think about that for, you know, Chevrolet or Dodge Chrysler or Jeep Ram. Feel free to run with my idea.
Those are good ideas. Go to ChicagoAutoShow.com for all this information.
Okay. Ticket information for the charity event on that site as well, JC?
There's a firstlookforcharity.org. We'll have all that information, and that runs tomorrow night. We kick off at 7 o'clock. Great entertainment, great food, great drinks, a lot of fun.
Okay, and we'll have some fun with some options if people want to share those on text or phone with us, 312-981-7200. See you at the auto show, JC. Thanks for the time this morning.
Thank you, Bob.
And have a good day. So, Dave, if the Blackhawks miss the playoffs by 1 point, we're going to be thinking about the game last night where it was an officiating gaffe that really cost them the game, wasn't it?
Well, they waved off a goal, and at first there was talk that there was a hand pass. Then it looked like there was no hand pass. And the official admitted to Jeremy Colladan afterwards that they should not have blown the whistle. So it happens. And they waved off with a shorthanded goal that sent the United Center into delirium. You can imagine, Bob, that when they waved off the goal, people at the United Center weren't real happy.
No,
about
I wouldn't
it.
Think
the
so.
Crowd kind of voiced their displeasure with that decision, but it does happen, and it's, you know, it could come down to one point down the road, but it, you could go over the course of 82 games.
Oh,
there
will
be lots of points that you could say, well, should have had that one, should have had that one. Maybe they should have won two nights ago in Minnesota.
Yeah.
So,
and it seemed like last night that the Bruins were all over Leonard, the goalie. I mean, it was like the Blackhawks didn't show up at the beginning of that game last night.
Well, let's see. In the first period, they were outshot 16-5. I think at one point, I think the scoring chances were something like 14-3 in favor of Boston, and the shots on goal for the game were like 2-1 in favor of the Bruins. But Robin Leonard kept them in the game, and he made 38 saves, and they had every opportunity to win it. They also, their penalty kill was very good last night against a really good Boston power play. So, I mean, there are some good things in that game, and to get a point is important. That's something that Colladen talks about all the time. Just get as many as you can, and it's going to keep you in striking distance. And right now, they're the first team out in the Western Conference in that wild card race, and they're 2 points out. So, and you just have to regroup and get ready for a tough five-game trip through Canada in the West.
Yeah, I enjoyed watching the game last night, and my wife's out of town, so I have full control of the television set at home. Although, you know what? And I complain about that healthy green shake she makes me every morning, and I haven't had that this week because she's not here, and I'm not going to make one of those kale spinach, whatever else she puts in there that tastes like the lawn. I'm not going to make that for myself, but I must admit, I'm dragging. I feel
that
less
stuff
energy.
Is good for you.
No, I really. And she puts all these powders in there, and it really tastes horrible. Unless I get her to throw in a banana or something.
Well, you can always do that. There's nothing wrong with that. Get some extra potassium. But you can go over.
Well, the sugar. She's very anti-sugar.
Well, I get that. But you can go to just about any grocery store now has a juice bar, or go to a Jamba Juice or a place like that, and they'll whip one up for you.
Yeah, I was thinking about that last night when I was at Mariano's.
And they have a juice bar
that
there.
Yeah. But then it's all pretty sugary. All of the, I was looking at the smoothie menu, and I thought, well, maybe I'll just get a milkshake. So it kind of defeats the purpose.
So you're avoiding sugar in a healthy smoothie and opting for the milkshake, which has 10 times the sugar.
But she gets back in town Friday. But please don't tell her that I said this. But I feel the difference, really, because she makes that for me every day. She makes one for her and one for me. And there's a lot of green stuff in there. And I think it gives me energy. It really does. I mean, I hate to admit it, but it's true. So I can't wait to have that again. Because since I've been doing, how long have I been doing the show here? About a month or so. And this is the first week where I have felt like tired during the broadcast. And the first week I've been without the green shakes that taste like the lawn. So draw your conclusion.
Okay, but you were out at the Heaven on 7 event two nights ago.
Yeah, you're
right?
Out partying every night.
You're out late.
Yeah,
so maybe that's
true.
Got something to do with it.
Well, I wasn't out late, though. I did get home. I've been getting to bed actually earlier than normal this week because I have no distractions or interruptions or tasks or assignments, if you know what I mean. So, you know, I think it's the green shake. You know, sorry
no
to admit
honeydew.
That.
She didn't leave you a honeydew list when she left?
Oh, no, I got one of those.
Oh, yeah.
Believe me, I had to put together two new lamps last night. And have you ever put together a lamp?
Not lately.
It's
you
complicated.
Do all the wiring yourself?
Well, no, but you have to put the thing together. You know, you have to put the, I don't know.
It wasn't from IKEA, was it?
No, it wasn't quite that difficult, but you still have to put the whatever they call the stem into the base, and then the they have all these terms for the little thing that the shade rests on, and then you have to screw in the part where the bulb will go in. And believe me, I can screw up anything, and so I was trying to be very careful doing this, but I had some success, except the shade is crooked. So
you weren't dancing with it on your head, were you?
No, I have to figure that out before she comes back.
Well, I hear a topic for Lou Manfredini for tomorrow.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Exactly. Yeah.
Lou, I got this lampshade.
Well, that's the thing. When I listen to Lou on Saturday morning here, the thing that I find ridiculous is people are calling up saying, I have to rewire my entire house, Lou. Can you tell me how to do it? And then, of course, he goes into detail about how people can do these things. And I want to call in and ask him about screwing in a light bulb or putting a lampshade on. He ought to do, I keep telling him, devote an hour of the show to dummies, you know, like me, Mr. Fix It for Dummies Hour, and then people will call in and ask him things like, do you, to tighten something, does it go to the right or to the left? And, you know, people like me will benefit from that. It's another programming idea I have around here that nobody
have
listens
you pitched
to.
That to anybody yet?
No, just Lou. He didn't really respond. He kind of laughed, and that was it. Coming up on the broadcast, we'll check on this complicated weather, which is, depending on where you are, you've got a little snow or heavier snow, and you're going to get some later. You're maybe not going to get some later, but if you're near the lake, you will get some later. And then there's this Northwestern University study on red meat, which, you know, it seems like every week there's a new study on this. Should you eat red meat? Should you not eat red meat? Is it okay? Is it not okay? How much can you eat? You know, we'll get to the bottom of that right after the 7:30 news. Looking out the window of the Bob Surratt building, it's snowing. Is this lake effect snow? Let's check in with WGN meteorologist Mike Jansen. Mike?
Hey, no, this is still just part of the system snow. Lake effect snow will show up here later on this evening into tonight. Here this morning, through the afternoon, there is the potential for maybe up to an inch of accumulation, and then coming up tonight, somewhere, or depending on where that lake effect snow band does set up, we could be looking at possibly up to another inch of accumulation there. The lake effect snow will start in northeastern Illinois and work its way east over to northwest Indiana by tomorrow morning. So far, the treated surfaces, from what we've been seeing, are looking okay out there on the road, just wet. But there's those untreated and side streets where things are a little slick, had a little slushiness out there here this morning.
Thank you, Mike. A little extra weather for you this morning on this wintry day. It's 7:40 right now. Oh, I meant to do this. I'm tearing up the weather and refusing to shake Tom Skilling's hand today. We saw a Tribune headline the other day. Sorry, meat lovers. New Northwestern research confirms health risks and clashes with last year's optimistic report. Did you see this? Did you hear about this? It's another one of these studies. And this was a huge study that Northwestern did about red meat and health. Nearly 30,000 men and women were included in the Northwestern study. It followed participants from six different long-term research cohorts for up to 30 years. And the thing that's really confusing about this is it sort of conflicts with a study that was recently done about meat and says something different. So who are we supposed to believe and what are we supposed to do? Well, what we're going to do here in about 5 minutes is check in with a chief nutrition person over. And is she a dietitian? I think so. RDN, is that what that means? Yeah, okay. And she's a PhD, too, and I think she'll help us understand what this research that Northwestern just conducted means and just how much red meat is good, how much is bad. And, you know, we'll get into all that with you here coming up momentarily. 7:42 right now. And after 8, as always, Dean Richards with our entertainment report. And I like to remind you about this, too, because I know you can't be with us all the way sometimes. And if you want to hear something on the show again or something that you miss, you can just check the podcast out after 9 o'clock. We get that loaded up at WGNradio.com and put the full show online, so you can check that out. We're trying to get to the bottom of this meat study. New research published this week in the Internal Medicine in JAMA, J-A-M-A, found that eating two servings of red meat or processed meat weekly is associated with a 3 to 7% higher risk of cardiovascular disease, such as heart attack and stroke, and a 3% higher risk of death from all causes. With us to talk about all this, Professor of Preventive Medicine at Northwestern University's Feinberg School of Medicine, Linda Van Horn. The research was done by Northwestern folks. Good morning, Linda. How are you doing today?
Good morning. Thank you. I'm fine.
I'm not fine because I'm very confused, because this study seems to say something different than the last study on meat that was in the news. Can you clear this up for us? What are we supposed to do?
Yes, I recognize the confusion and I sympathize, believe me. In the world of research, it's a dynamic process, and every study reveals something new. In this case, I think it's a matter of recognition that the prior studies have been criticized heavily for some of their statistical analyses and flaws in some of the methodology that have been determined to really alter the interpretation of those results. I think that is why the study that was published just recently now in JAMA, Internal Medicine, is offering a new insight, given the fact that these are data collected from six different cohorts of individuals, over 29,000 people. And these are studies that are sort of the granddaddies of longitudinal cohort studies, including things like the Framingham study, which most people know is sort of the bedrock of cardiovascular research, and the Framingham offspring study, and four other very well-known cohort studies with really good data that were collected in a pristine manner and analyzed very carefully. And thus, I think the results here, especially speaking as a nutritionist, really do justice to some of the dietary data that often go unrecognized or unquantified in most other studies. So in this one, pooling these data together and offering an epidemiological approach, meaning big numbers, really provide a more meaningful and robust result, showing again that eating more meat, especially processed meat, can be disadvantageous in both cardiovascular and all-cause mortality.
Now, this study that was in the news back in October that we're referring to, that's adding to the confusion, that study said there was insufficient evidence to recommend people reduce their meat intake. And what you're saying is this study really tapped into many more people over a longer period of time and seems to be a better study on this question. Do I have that right?
Correct. Yes, that's correct. I'm personally familiar with some of, specifically the diet data that were collected in some of these cohorts, and the ability to tease out these kinds of results, and looking at the benefit of, you know, 19 years of data really provides an amazing amount of strength and make these results fairly robust.
Okay, give me the bottom line now then on red meat, on poultry, and I know and fish too. What can you tell us about all of that?
All right. Well, I'm happy to say, you know, from a nutritional point of view, all is not lost here. It doesn't mean you can never eat meat or anything like that. However, it does continue to add to the growing evidence suggesting that more plant-based proteins from, you know, foods like beans and nuts and other plant-based sources, as well as fish,
should really compromise or comprise the majority of a person's intake over time so that you can indulge, for example, occasionally in red meat if you like it. You know, the most amazing thing looking at this over time is that the more people eat that way, more fruits and nuts and vegetables and whole grains and fish, the less interested they are in eating the red and processed meat. Hmm. So that doesn't mean you can't eat it. It's just that over time, as you shift your focus, you find yourself wanting it less and less often.
Did the study tell us anything about poultry, about chicken?
Yeah, poultry, the finding in poultry is interesting, and the problem with getting down to the specifics related to that, because, of course, we've often recommended chicken or turkey as an alternative to red meat. And I believe that once we are able to look more specifically at the methodology, obviously deep fat fried chicken is a very different dietary intake than eating broiled or grilled or roasted chicken. And these data were not specific in regard to the preparation techniques. And back in the early days when, trans fatty acids were very much a part of the diet, and when you deep fat fry, you increase exposure to trans fats. So any deep fat fried food, and obviously chicken is one of those, may be the source, not the chicken, but the method of preparation.
And what about all these impossible burgers and various imitation plant-based foods now?
Right.
What about those?
Right. Well, I'm glad you're asking, because I think that's definitely a step in the right direction. However, I believe there needs to be further attention paid, again, to the method of preparation. Many of those products, unfortunately, are processed fairly heavily, and often when processing occurs, there's a large amount of sodium and other additives that could compromise the overall nutritional value. But the idea is good, and I believe in American ingenuity, and they're going to come up with a way to make it not only taste great, but also be nutritious.
I'll tell you what really scared me reading about the study was this line. There is still a risk based on what you ate 20 years ago. Are you kidding me? Really?
Well, the nature of this study is exactly based on that. So we're looking at what people were eating and then following them 19 years later to see what happened to them. And I think the message being sent there is a lifetime of consumption starting as far back as 19 years ago is just additive over those years. So to me, the good news here is it's not too late. As you continue to grow older and perhaps more concerned about your health, it's a good idea to try to offload some of those eating habits that may have been not the best choices as we discover more and more about what are.
Who didn't have pizza and french fries and other healthy items like that during the college years?
Exactly.
My theory has always been that that was okay because the good Lord designed your body to withstand that at a younger age. You just need to be healthier as you get older. That's my theory.
Well, that's an interesting theory that many people believed for many, many years, but we're actually in the midst of doing research that suggests that your health actually and nutritional benefits start in utero. It's not so much what you ate, it's what your mother ate that really launches you toward a healthy lifestyle.
Well, I'm not worried about that because my mom was pretty healthy and she made it to 97. The problem was, once I came out into the world, that's when the trouble started. And, just thinking of all the junk food I ate. And, none of us were as aware as we are now about what's in our food, right?
Right. Well, I think that's why research is important, because every day we're learning something new. But I do believe that the good news, the take-home message here, is not that all is lost, rather that recognition of these kinds of eating behaviors is a a touch point that one should take seriously going forward in life, whatever your age is, and recognizing, again, speaking as a nutritionist, that the benefits of the fruit, vegetable, plant-based foods are tremendous. And if you avoid those foods, you're denying your body of the very things that the good Lord did intend for you to be eating. So I do think, you know, it's not a matter of all is hopeless, rather just the opposite, that, wow, glad I learned this now, and I'm starting to make some changes as I go forward.
Well, I'll be thinking about you at lunch and dinner, for sure. Linda Van Horn, Professor of Preventive Medicine at Northwestern University's Feinberg School of Medicine, thanks for helping us understand this research that's been in the news this week about meat. Appreciate that, Linda.
Oh, thank you so much. It was my pleasure.
Have a good day.
Enjoy. You too. Thanks.
How you doing on time? It's 8:11. Dean Richards Entertainment News is on the air, and I guess Dean, at the age of 103, nobody was surprised about the death of Kirk Douglas, but the reaction is quite striking, and the more you find out about this guy's career and his life, and I was just reading about how he donated something like $40 million to the Motion Picture and TV Fund to provide health care and other services to entertainment industry workers, and he practically built a home for Alzheimer's patients, the more impressive this man was.
Yeah, pretty much since he suffered that stroke in 1996, pretty much all he's done. He did a couple of movies, one with Michael Douglas. It's got to be 10, 15 years ago, something like that. But he pretty much has spent all of his time doing charity and benevolent kind of situations, and donating a crazy amount of money. Very characteristic of who Kirk Douglas was throughout his entire career. Always working for, not so much for himself, but sharing the wealth that he earned, sharing his notoriety, and probably, you know, his greatest claim to fame was helping to break the back of Joseph McCarthy's blacklist, mm-hmm. In which they were calling out Hollywood stars and writers who they suspected of being communist. Most notably in the production of Spartacus, his most famous role. But he had did 80 movies, which is amazing. He was nominated for Academy Awards 3 times, never won one. He did win a Career Achievement Academy Award, several Lifetime Achievement Awards, the Presidential Medal of Freedom. He was quite a guy. Was married, you know, in Hollywood, married to the same person for 65 years. That doesn't happen ever.
No.
That doesn't happen at all. 4 sons, Eric, Joel, Peter, and, of course, Oscar winner Michael Douglas, who was the one who announced his death yesterday. Had a beautiful statement saying that he was a legend in Hollywood. But he, was just dad to them. Catherine Zeta-Jones yesterday tweeted out, "To my darling Kirk, I shall love you for the rest of my life. I miss you already. Sleep tight." Steven Spielberg tweeted out yesterday, "Kirk remained his movie star charisma right to the end of his wonderful life, and I'm honored to have been a small part of it for the last 45 years. I'll miss his handwritten notes, his letters, his fatherly advice, his wisdom and courage. Such a breathtaking body of work are enough to inspire me for the rest of my life." 93-year-old Tony Bennett said of Kirk Douglas, "He was a dear friend, a talented actor, and a dedicated humanitarian. He was one of a kind, and we'll miss him." And the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences tweeted out a Kirk Douglas quote in which he said, "I wanted to be an actor since I was a kid in the second grade. I did a play, and my mother made me a black apron. I played a shoemaker. After the performance, my father gave me my first Oscar, an ice cream cone." And the Academy said goodbye to a Hollywood legend. 103 years old, and still pretty active. He hadn't really done all that much in public the last couple of years, but I interviewed him a couple of times post-stroke. And he was very witty and very funny and a little naughty. He was quite the guy. Even I probably interviewed him when he was 98, 99, something like that. It was quite amazing.
Dean Richards, I wish you would have asked Kirk Douglas about his diet and exercise habits. What a long, remarkable life this man had.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's amazing. I mean, it makes you think, would I want to live to be 103? I guess I would. I guess it depends on your quality of life. But, you know, he was always very physically fit. He was always in good shape. There are some fantastic old pictures. You know, everybody's been putting out albums and albums of old pictures of Kirk Douglas, because he came up during, you know, that era in Hollywood when everything was movie magazines and, you know, photographs of it all. And there's some fantastic black and white pictures of him and his little kids, his four sons. He's holding a very long metal bar. On one side of the bar are two of his sons. On the other side are the other two sons. So his four sons, and he's, you know, doing he's weightlifting with his sons. So, you know, he was he didn't have to go through all this training like today's actors have to. He just always was in great shape.
And he came back from that stroke, and he gave a little short but very moving speech at the Academy Awards when he got that Oscar, remember?
Right, yeah, the honorary Oscar.
Mm-hmm.
A great guy, you know, just super nice guy. And they say, you know, that the word legendary is tossed around way too much. That word was invented for guys like him.
Yep.
He was a true Hollywood legend before anybody was a true Hollywood legend.
And you have a little tape from an interview, is that right?
From, we have just a little montage of some of his most classic roles.
Oh, okay.
I know newspapers backward, forward, and sideways. I can write them, edit them, print them, wrap them, and sell them. I can handle big news and little news. And if there's no news, I'll go out and bite a dog.
I'm a sentimental man, Martha.
You owe me something. You'll never be happy until you square yourself.
Yes, I know who Judas was. Man I worked for and admired.
Is this what you're trying to do? Sure hate being away from you.
All your personal problems resolved?
Well, let's say they're cut down to size.
I'm Spartacus!
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 Classic.
He was Spartacus.
Classic. So, so classic, yeah. from 1960. You know, one of the it breaks my heart this morning when I come into the newsroom this morning, and I just assume everybody knows who Kirk Douglas is, and you know, some of the younger members of our staff have. You know, we may as well be
Michael Douglas's father. You got to go.
Well,
there.
I don't even think they know who Michael Douglas is.
That'll happen if you're around long enough.
Is he somehow related to Billie Eilish?
All right, let's move on to Michelle Obama. And is this going to be a theatrical movie?
This is going to be a Showtime series. She's not starring in it, but they announced yesterday that Academy Award winner Viola Davis will be playing Michelle Obama in this new series. It'll be on Showtime. The series is going to be called First Ladies, and will take on a different First Lady each time around, like Michelle Obama or Eleanor Roosevelt or Betty Ford, or, you know, go down the list of some of our most famous and interesting and colorful first ladies. They haven't announced who will be playing some of the other first ladies yet, but they did announce yesterday that Viola Davis is attached to this. So they also haven't said when it's going to be on Showtime yet. So we'll keep an eye on that and let everybody know. It sounds really interesting.
That reminds me, we had a text from 630. Bob, would you please ask Dean about a Showtime show, Shameless. Is it coming back next season? Do we know?
I love Shameless. You know, shot here in Chicago. It is going to be coming back for its final season, season 11. It will be the final season. They did announce that. And it will be coming back, but not until January of 2021. So we're going to have to wait a little while for that. William H. Macy and so many other great performances in there.
Now let's go to our daily feature called Today's Showbiz Personality in Trouble. Who is it this time?
well, this is the Shannon Doherty story. She announced the other day that she's got stage 4 terminal breast cancer, which is horrible. And yesterday it was announced that her insurance company is kind of trashing her publicly, or so she says anyway. She has a lawsuit going against State Farm Insurance in which she is suing them for the full amount of repairs on her home that was damaged in the California wildfires a couple of years ago. Yesterday, State Farm's lawyers said that Doherty is using her diagnosis of stage 4 cancer to get sympathy in her efforts to get a full payout from State Farm, when they say really the home only had smoke damage, no fire, no structural damage. So this sounds like this is going to get super ugly between Shannon Doherty and State Farm, if you know the first day of the trial is any indication.
Yeah, it's already ugly. Like a good neighbor. Now then, Dean has Oscar picks, and he's been telling us this week, giving us his predictions. What do you got for us today?
Today I've got the two main acting categories. Start off with Best Actress, where the nominees are Cynthia Erivo in Harriet, Scarlett Johansson in Marriage Story, Renee Zellweger in Judy, Saoirse Ronan in Little Women, Charlize Theron in Bombshell. Did you tell me that you saw Little Women? That you were forced to see Little Women?
I remember some of it when I wasn't napping. Yes, that's correct.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, you got to sometimes. I don't know if a lot of people know this about Bob. He absorbs the movies better when he is in the alpha state.
That's correct.
Yeah. My pick for this, as she's been going along, I think this may be the easiest year for acting awards. Renee Zellweger clearly is going to win for Best Actor for playing Judy Garland. Number one, Hollywood loves its Hollywood icons, and Judy Garland was certainly one of those. Judy Garland's impersonation of her in this movie was pretty much dead on, although I thought was a little bit one-dimensional. I was not the biggest fan of this movie, but I guess given the competition this year, she has clearly been the winner in award season so far. So no question about it, Renee Zellweger is going to be the big winner. On the Best Actor side of it all, the nominees are Antonio Banderas in Pain and Glory, Leonardo DiCaprio, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Adam Driver for Marriage Story, Joaquin Phoenix in Joker, and Jonathan Pryce, who was great in Two Popes. All great performances. But here's another case where Joaquin Phoenix has been taking the victory lap at every award show. But you want to talk about a nuanced, multi-layered, multi-dimensional performance. This movie, to me, was one of the most disturbing of the year. It really stayed with me for weeks, what a depressing, sad statement this was on the criminal mind and the lack of mental health that we have in our country. And this movie came out in the fall at a time when, gun control and these mass shootings were taking place. So it really, struck home in a all too serious kind of way. But this performance by Joaquin Phoenix, simply can't be matched. All the other performances are good. This is a once-in-a-lifetime kind of performance from Joaquin Phoenix. He will definitely win Best Actor on Sunday. And this is a main reason a lot of people don't like to stay awake, for the Academy Awards, because it's such a long show. And the acting awards are at the very end of the show. You know Joaquin Phoenix is going to do something crazy when he's on stage. It's the reason that we watch these shows.
Yes.
To see the crazy stuff that's going to happen. When he won at the BAFTA Awards, the British equivalent of the Academy Awards this past weekend, he went on a long, disjointed rant hopefully he'll give us, as a loyal American, he will also give us something equally as crazy to chew on and dissect on Monday morning when we have the recap on all this.
If we had the band here this morning, they'd be playing you off right now, Dean. But
that's the story of my life.
Thanks, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow.
Let's say good morning to David Hochberg from Homeside Financial. Hi, David.
How you doing, bud?
I'm doing good. If anybody has a money question, now's the time to give us a buzz or a text at 312-981-7200. As we just heard Steve mention, all the stocks are up. They held on to gains into the market open. Each of the three major indices advancing just after the opening bell. So are you optimistic these days, David?
Yeah, you know what's happening, Webb? Everybody's stock portfolios are increasing, which is enabling them to obviously have more money in savings and in their growing portfolios, which is enabling them to use that money to look to purchase a home. You know, you get into homes for as little as zero down if you're a veteran that qualifies for a VA loan, and 3% down with certain Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac loans, and 3.5% down with FHA loans. So market is helping folks out. And home ownership for some people, Bob, is an option. And for other people, renting is just as fine. So, we're seeing that this market is definitely helping our listeners do some things that they might not have once been able to do with a stock market that hasn't been as aggressive.
Boy, I'm sure you've seen the stories lately about the trend. A lot of folks renting home sales in many areas kind of flat these days. What are you seeing?
Well, I'm seeing that the state of Illinois better get their heads out of their rear ends, because I just qualified a person to buy a home in Grays Lake for $300,000. Okay, $12,000 in real estate taxes in Grays Lake. I mean, give me a break. 4% of the property value? That's just crazy. So what needs to happen in this state? Other parts of the country, Bob, real estate is rocket. I mean, just absolutely on fire. South Carolina, we've got groups out in South Carolina on fire. Washington, the state of Washington up in the Northwest, on fire. Colorado, on fire. Illinois, lukewarm. And I blame the state and county representatives for not getting their spending in check and not keeping real estate taxes in check, because that's got a direct correlation on property values. It's ridiculous.
We keep hearing that one of the problems, millennials, young people, not necessarily interested in moving to the suburbs, buying these big homes, McMansions, some people call them. What do you think?
Well, I'm thinking that a lot of these millennials are hamstrung and weighed down and anchored down. Just did a loan for a lady yesterday, tried to get her a loan. She had $300,000 worth of student loans that she co-signed with her parents, okay? Even though that they're in forbearance, they still have to be counted against $300,000 with student loans. I said, how much money do you make? $65,000 a year. I go, so let me do the math. You've got $300,000 worth of student loans making $65,000 a year salary? She's like, yeah. I'm like, well, unless you get a cosigner, if your parents want to cosign, it's impossible for these kids to buy homes with all the student loan debt, and something's got to be done with that. I'm seeing that the younger generation, I'm an old man, 53 now, for the love of God, I see that the listeners that we talk to, or the listeners' kids that we talk to, or grandkids that we talk to, that are interested in home ownership, because, I've owned 5-6 houses in my lifetime. It's great. I love owning a house, but a lot of these younger listeners just can't qualify to buy a home with these student loans that they're carrying around. Sad.
Big problem.
Sad. Very sad.
Yep. David Hochberg of Homeside Financial. When do you know it's time to refinance, David?
When you can save money, when you can pay off debt, use the home's equity to eliminate debt. I'll give you an example. I was with a guy yesterday. He had a 5.875% 30-year fixed loan that I put him into like 12 years ago. And then he had a home equity loan at like 8.5% self-employed. And he never thought about refinancing because he's an S corporation, only made $36,000 a year because he's got a great accountant. I said, well, what are you doing? So why don't you just have your accountant file your next tax return showing that you're making more money? Yeah, you're going to pay, deduct less, right? And show that you make more money on paper. And then the following year, do whatever, deduct more so we could refinance, right? So a lot of people don't realize that they could do that, okay? And that is a huge tool for your listeners out there to refinance. We just took a guy out of a 6.5% FHA loan that he's been in for years. I'm like, well, what have you been doing? You know, how come you haven't called? And here, he was sick. He was out of a job. He didn't have a lot of income, accumulated a ton of credit cards. And he was finally able to, he got better, thank God. He was back at work, fully employed, finally started making money. So the biggest question is this, Bob. If your listeners can refinance their loan or rearrange their financial furniture and maybe go from a 30-year to a 25-year at the same payment. I just took one of my best friends, college fraternity brothers, down from a 30-year into a 25-year fixed loan, okay? No, 20-year fixed loan. He's going to shave off 3 years, keep the payment exactly the same, and he's going to shave off 3 years and save tens of thousands of dollars just because we're able to lower the term. He didn't save any money. His payment didn't go down, but by paying the same thing, he eliminated 3 years off the backside of his mortgage. This is one of my best friends. Saved 36 months of payments at over $1,000 a month. So go figure that out. Over the life alone, you start saving a ton of money. So when is it a good time? I always get this question. If you could save money, if you could rearrange your financial furniture to pay off some debt, and everybody's like, yeah, but you're adding it to the mortgage. Yes, but your overall monthly payment is going down. And what you do with that savings to pay off other debt, or maybe use that savings to pay your mortgage down, that's up to you. Okay, your listeners are grown men and women. They can make their own financial decisions, but you've got to take a look at it, especially when rates are this low, Bob. We're back into the threes on the 30-year fixed loan. The market's up. This Carnova virus in China is freaking the bond market out, which is lowering interest rates. Hmm. Your listeners have to take advantage of these low rates because they could save a ton of money.
Do you like a fixed rate or adjustable these days?
You know what, and my statement to that is Baskin Robbins has 31 flavors, each flavor for a different day of the month. Everybody's got different flavors, Bob. I just talked to a guy. I took him out of a 30-year fixed loan, put him into a 5-year ARM because he's planning on leaving his house and moving south and retiring in 2 years. So he put him into a 5-year. I talked to a couple last week whose kids are juniors in high school right now. They don't need their big fat house with the big fat real estate taxes. They're going to be downsizing. Put them into a 7-year ARM because they were able to save a quarter to half a point in the rate over a 30-year fixed loan. So again, if you plan on living in the place for a short period of time, there's nothing wrong with an adjustable rate mortgage. They are phenomenal, especially if it's a short-term plan. Okay, some people like 15-year fixed loans. Not a big fan of them myself, but if you could go, because I don't like our listeners being tied to a lower payment, but it kind of contradicts what I said about my buddy. My buddy's payment didn't go up, and he shaved off 3 years off his mortgage. So I'm not a big fan of 15-year fixed loans unless you could afford the payment, and most people think they can afford the payment, but I can tell you right now, we are taking a ton of people out of the 15-year fixed loan they went into 5 years ago and doing cash-out refinances, paying off $20,000, $30,000 with credit card debt that they've accumulated and putting them back into 30-year fixed loans. So why you'd want our listeners to go from into a 15 or 20-year while they're accumulating credit card debt absolutely makes no absolute sense to me, because I'd much rather you pay off your credit card debt than pay down your mortgage, because it's a much higher interest rate and you can't write off that. Most of the times, you check with your CPA, I'm not a financial planner, you know, most of your listeners are able to write off the interest of their mortgage and their real estate taxes up to a certain point. Last time I looked, you can't write off credit card debt. So we got what our team does and what good mortgage professionals do out there, and there are a lot of good mortgage professionals, we give the options, right? Hey, Sally and Joe listener, you want an ARM? Here's your payment. Here are the risks. Here are the rewards. You want a 15, a 20, and a 30? Here's the risk. Here's the reward. If you pay the exact same payment, if you compare the payment of the 15-year fixed loan to the payment of the 30-year fixed loan, the 30-year fixed loan will be lower because it's based on a 360-month amortization payback as opposed to 180. If you made the same payment as you would in the 30-year as it would have been in the 15-year, you will pay the 30-year off in about 16 years, okay, right around 16 years. So what I always recommend to our listeners is go, if you are dead set on the 15, go into the 30, right? Both of us grew up in the Jewish household, and we all heard, God forbid, 400 times in a day. So if, God forbid, something happens, sick, loss of a job, car crash, illness, whatever, family member needs some help. If you're locked into a 15-year fixed loan, you can't back out that payment at times of emergency. In a 30-year fixed loan, you could pay the 30-year, but if you have extra dough, you could lump it on and pay it off faster when times are good. And then when times are not so good, you could always throttle back and only pay it at 30-year and not be penalized, instead of loading up your credit card debt, which most of our listeners do.
If you want more from David Hochberg, and Lord knows you just can't get enough of him at Homeside Financial, you can listen in after Mr. Fix-It on Saturday. David's on the radio here. And what do you got coming up for the boys and girls this weekend, David?
Well, thanks for that plug, man. We have Rich Dykstra coming in from Dykstra Home Services. Tom, 5 miles east of the Oakbrook Shopping Center, Janky, will be in from Builder Supply Outlet. MegaPros, Jeremy from MegaPros Home Improvements. So we love the listeners call in. We're going to ask listeners to send pictures of their heating and air conditioning unit so Rich can take a look at it, and also their kitchens and bathrooms and basements that they want remodeled, or want advice on how to remodel them for Tom and MegaPro Jer on this weekend show, and help our listeners out every way we can. If you've got a mortgage question, obviously, I'll be hosting the show and could answer all your mortgage questions.
That's Saturday, 10 to noon, right?
Yep, after Mr. Fix-It, Lou Manfredini show. I think he's out at the home show this weekend in St. Charles, I think. So, yeah, go out, check him live, and plug us in on your way home.
Will do. All right, always good talking to you, David. You have a good day.
Thanks, guys. Have a great day. Bye.
Talk to you down the road, and we'll talk to John Williams about what he's got coming on after the 9 o'clock news today. Get a little preview of that and the news. All right, what have we learned on this morning's broadcast? Eat more fish. Also, don't keep apples in the fridge. What are we going to learn on the John Williams show today?
That Bob Cerrata is a recipient of the Presidential Medal of Freedom.
Oh, wow. You know what? This is a great... Check in my speech now or wait?
This time, Dave Bennett is dramatically placing it over Bob's head and onto his neck and shoulders.
But I'm on my tiptoes.
Actually, I'll give a little quiz for you. Who has and has not received the medal? You know, it was a little bit of a controversy the other night. And I thought, well, who does and doesn't get that thing? So let's just walk through the list and talk a little bit about that on the show today.
I'd like to thank Miss Thorson, my third grade teacher at the Volta School. Yeah. I'll continue this
nice touch
acceptance speech tomorrow.
Why don't you go ahead and write it, and then we'll review it tomorrow.
Okay. John's after the news at 9. Thanks for listening. Have a great day. And as they say on TV news to the reporters, stay safe out there.